Wednesday, time for our weekly conversation with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today is Kevin Wooster, veteran journalist and Rapid City reporter for KELO-TV. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Carl. Always good to be back.
Also with us is John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. And, John, nice to talk with you again as well.
I'd rather listen to the Haig brothers than Kevin and myself.
Well, stay tuned. That's coming up. Well, Governor Dugard made his budget proposal for fiscal year 2015. That happened yesterday before lawmakers. His budget includes bigger than expected spending increases for schools and health care. Kevin, we'll start with you. Anything about this, the budget that was surprising?
It's kind of been on his plan since 2011, you know, when he started out right away by those cuts, and that was a pretty controversial move, although a lot of people liked the fact that he was bringing some things back into fiscal balance. But I think one of the things he said is when we get more money coming back into our state coffers, we're going to do some more things with it, and I think he's in a position now that he can sort of fulfill that promise, and it doesn't hurt that it's coming into a campaign year to kind of to put a Band-Aid on that wound maybe that some people still feel or still see after the cuts in 2011.
John Hunter?
Well, the unclaimed property windfall certainly helps kind of everything look better. And, I think he was pretty smart in using that one-time money plus other one-time things to pay down debt and so forth that allows future budgets to be less constrained. So, I think getting 3% for schools and providers and state salary is, I think a welcome improvement over what's happened in recent years.
Kevin Wooster, agree, a welcome improvement?
Oh, yeah, I think most people certainly were going to come together with sort of a bipartisan way when we've got the money and we're going to commit it to something of a core belief and core important is education and, some of those medical needs that we have in the state. So I can't imagine anybody would argue with it very much.
The one-time money for one-time things, also the governor wants to use it for the Building South Dakota project. Is that the best way, John, to use the one-time money instead of using it for more of the ongoing programs?
Well, there's always a discussion as to what kind of investments can you make with one-time stuff that pay off over time. And if you think, and everyone defines paying off differently. Some people say, well, that'll mean, the citizenry is healthier or better educated or happier. Or in some cases, people will say, if you can use that to enhance future revenues, that would be a good thing. And I think since we rely, our state relies on an economy with heavy reliance on sales tax, that we need economic growth to do that. And if you can grow South Dakota, that would certainly help future state tax revenues.
Kevin Wooster, the one-time money?
Well, that's a tough question. And the governor's done some creative things with it here today to keep within that Republican principle of trying not to commit one-time monies to ongoing expenses. I think there's going to be some concern about this, about the economic program, the Building South Dakota program, and how this affects what was passed last year. I know Bernie Hunhoff on the Democratic side has some issues with the way this would change that program in his mind, and there could be some Republican support on that, at least from out here in the Black Hills. Bernie likes the way that system came out before, and I think he has some reservations about that, so this could be a interesting discussion point.
Another discussion point is the state's Medicaid program. The governor isn't recommending an expansion of the Medicaid program under the Affordable Care Act. John Hunter, do you see this as a contentious issue during the upcoming session?
Well, I think so. I think people will talk about it a lot, and it won't be easily resolved. Part of the trick is that the Affordable Care Act, which affects some of this, is kind of a moving target where we have changes, and we're not sure exactly. Still, some people want to repeal it, and you get delays and so forth. And so, for anyone, for either side or for multiple sides, it's hard to make a plan or to decide exactly where you're going when the landscape is changing pretty frequently.
Kevin Wooster, Medicaid program. You think this is still going to be something? It's been discussed now for a couple of years in this session. That'll be the case again in 2014.
Well, there's a really compelling reason to expand it, you know, and the federal money is there. And I think the issue here of people that are working poor and just can't afford this coverage and get in real life bind situations because of it, you know, there's really that sense that we should do this. I think the governor made a reasonable argument, certainly by South Dakota economic standards, on we don't know down the road how much this is going to cost us, and there's too much uncertainty at the federal level. Well, gosh, did the rollout of Obamacare support the governor's argument in this case as well as anything could have when you're trying to make an argument that we just don't know for sure what the federal government's going to do and what's going to be there in 6 months or a year, or if the system and the funding that they say will be there. I certainly think the governor could put Obamacare up as a poster child of what he's been saying in that regard.
There are some spending increases in the budget, but overall the budget proposal is conservative. Is the cautious road the way to go, John Hunter?
Well, I think so. I mean, as I listened to it, it seemed all the things that he was saying was reasonable. There are always projects that I think would like to get funded, and there's so much that takes place that we don't see, whether it's in a caucus or in, with the budget director and those sorts of things. So some of that tends to open up a little bit more during the session, and people start talking about it a little bit more and say, oh, yeah, this and this and this. So I think it's a fine start, and both supporters and detractors will start bringing up things, and then I think we'll get a clearer picture whether it's a good one or not.
Kevin Wooster, looking at the past governor's budgets, how much do they change once they get to the legislature and lawmakers start debating some of the proposals?
Well, they change a little bit. They would certainly change more, probably, if the Democrats had one or the other of the houses or both of them for a Republican governor. But I think I saw somewhere today that David Lust, one of the leaders here for the Republicans in the House, said that he didn't see a great deal of changes likely. And typically, my brother Terry, when he covered the legislature for so many years, used to kind of joke that we have this $3 or $4 billion budget, depending on where you were in history, and often it seems like the legislators ended up arguing over $700,000 or $1.5 million or something like that. So it isn't you ever expect a great deal of changes, but there could be some alterations of that proposal that could matter, and that's basically what they do, is they try and fine tune or find a little area where they can move something around where it really makes a difference.
The 2014 state legislative session gets underway in January, but State Representative Kathy Tyler, a Democrat, said earlier this week that legislators should meet in special session at the end of December to deal with investigations centering around economic development and the federal EB-5 program. Although a special session seems unlikely, John Hunter, do you think this is a good idea?
Well, I think it's very unlikely, to call for a special session 2 weeks before the regular session starts, especially since there appears to be some time in the early days when things are not quite up to top speed. So, nevertheless, and I've written about this, that department needs a full-fledged operational and financial audit, and it should be independent. Everyone believes that. I think the governor believes it, too. So what's the role of the legislature? That's a administrative department, or it's part of the administrative branch, and so it wouldn't be bad for them to authorize that, or maybe you could jointly find this outside agency. But I think there will be little controversy about this. This may sound strange, but because I think everyone wants to get have that audited independently and clear up the reputation soon and get back to work. So I think if there's any disagreement, it might be who the auditor might be, or how independent and how much it's going to cost, or some of those kind of things. But I think the idea of that being fully reviewed. Now her proposal really was focused a little more on the EB-5 thing, which I think is you know, has this federal investigation. It's not our program and so forth. But I think if you could do an operational and financial audit of the GOED, and that would improve the reputation of that department.
Kevin Wooster?
Well, I certainly think, as John says, the federal investigators are pretty good at what they do for a lot of this, and I think we would have trouble in a special session, you know, a bunch of lawmakers standing around the hallway looking at each other on a date. And it costs some money. There's no chance of a special session. And I thought Bob Mercer, in one of these typically astute evaluations, talked about the fact that the legislature already has a legislative audit that's pretty good at looking at things. If there's some areas that are appropriate for the legislature to look at, and as John says, there is some time early in the session where they could have some meetings, they could consider some things. There's always the possibility of a special interim committee, or as you said, a bipartisan panel or an independent review. The governor's showed that he has the ability to look at those with the Game, Fish, and Parks review, where he brought in an independent review entity. And there's some options there, and I agree with John, and I think most people would say that we're going to have a hard look at this one way or the other over the next year or so.
Kevin, do you think there's any danger of this becoming a partisan issue at all?
I think it will become a partisan issue, and it's certainly the timing is good for it to become a partisan issue in 2014. And you know, there's still some talk out there. Is there some homely paint coming out of this that could be sloshed on the round Senate campaign, since you know, he was actually the governor when this stuff was being shaped up, and so it has to become political. I mean, there's just no way around it becoming political.
John Hunter, do you think it'll become political?
Well, I completely agree with Kevin, and I think the place where it manifests itself is in that rounds campaign. You know, it would be possible. I mean, because that's probably a more competitive campaign that would use things like that. I'm not sure the governor's election or the campaign will be close enough for that to try to place some of that on Governor Dugard. So I think it will. I agree with Kevin. It'll manifest itself in the Senate campaign.
Well, talking about the governor's campaign, Democrats now have a candidate for governor. Joe Lowe has announced he'll challenge Governor Dugard next year. Kevin Wooster, what do we know about Joe Lowe?
Well, we know that he would be the only governor perhaps in history that could get to a forest fire faster than Joe. The difference is Joe would know what to do when he gets there. It's an interesting candidacy. Joe's an interesting character, you know, former mayor out in California for a mid-sized city, and a fire chief from out there that came to South Dakota and really worked well with Chanclo and did some things that I think we in the media like, because he opened up the fire process, had a training process for reporters so that we could get closer to the fire line and taught us how to protect ourselves and taught me how to die trying to get into a bag, because I was so terrible at it at all these training sessions. And they declared me dead every year. But he was very open. He's very interested in openness in government, I think. Having said that, he would come into this, if he happens to be the Democratic nominee, as, of course, a pronounced, profound, overwhelming underdog. And you know, where you go from there, I don't know. But Joe would be an interesting soundbite, I'll tell you that.
John Hunter, is he looking forward to his campaign?
Well, sure. Kevin knows him a lot better out in the Black Hills than I do here. But Mission Viejo, where he's mayor, was described as a mid-sized city. In South Dakota terms, it's a large city. It would be second only to Sioux Falls. And so it's not like being mayor of a town with 100 people in it. So I think he does have some of that political experience, but it is an uphill battle against a pretty popular governor, and being in a minority party without, you know, kind of state legislative experience and so forth. So it's uphill, but I really very much look forward to him getting in the race and hearing ideas.
Also running for governor, former Republican lawmaker Laura Hubbell, Mike Myers, former law professor, healthcare administrator, running as an independent, and last week or so, Curtis Strong, a Rapid City man, says he's running as a third-party candidate, even though all of them are underdogs. Kevin Wooster, do you think this race will in the end, turn out, at least over the next few months, turn out to be more interesting than perhaps we had thought earlier?
I think it could turn out to be interesting because there are people in this race that certainly have the ability to make some interesting statements, and I will, as reporters, all be waiting to report some of those. I think the governor is sleeping quite well these days based on who he's likely to face so far. And I think from my standpoint, I think the interesting thing is going to be whether Joe Lowe is the candidate the Democrats want and if they can rally behind him or if there are a couple others out there that are more likely to be the standard bearer. And in the meanwhile, these other candidates certainly have the potential, as you say, to make things interesting, if not necessarily competitive.
John Hunter, looking forward to this campaign. Think that there might be some interesting things happening?
Yeah, I mean, the best part of it, even if Governor Dugard is the heavy favorite, if you can get some ideas and discussion and new angles on things, that can always benefit. I'm always frustrated with races that are not contested, and we don't have very many of them, but it does happen sometime, and then you get no debate, no choice, nothing. So this is a wide range of candidates from kind of far Tea Party to independent candidates and so forth. So yeah, I am looking for it. I hope they get they make a lot of statements along the way.
Well, the Pledge of Allegiance has been in the news over the last several weeks or so, and the latest is that all grades in Rapid City schools are now being asked to recite the pledge. This follows the expansion of the pledge to high schools and Sioux Falls. Kevin, why do you think this has become an issue over the past few weeks?
Well, it's, you know, one point, and this is, of course, always a potentially controversial and high-profile issue when you talk about the pledge and patriotism and things like that. I think it usually just takes an ignition point. It takes a few people that are worked up about something. It takes a government body that's in a position to make a decision, and depending on how they handle it. And from there, it can take off in a lot of directions. And I think one of the directions it took off in coming to Rapid City was our school board in an area with, you know, really strong public patriotic foundations. Ellsworth Air Force Base is here, and it's a western South Dakota conservative, strongly militaristic, I think, culture. And so they are saying that they kind of wanted to get out in front of the issue and just settle it and say, here's what we're going to do. And I think it's going to be interesting because while this is a conservative area, there's also a pretty strong libertarian component out here and a hard-bitten, beat-up, strong liberal Democrat contingent out here. It'll be interesting to see if there's a conflict that arises.
John Hunter, do you see that there are benefits for students in saying the pledge?
Well, you know, I mean,
that's a tough question. I don't want to go there.
No, I don't mind. I think it depends a little bit on the era in which you grew up. Remember, Kevin and I are kind of post-World War II folks, and you know, at least, you know, my dad was in World War II, and so that kind of stuff in the 1960s and so forth was very important, and some people say that helped build the foundation of what we did and the loyalty and patriotism and all those kind of things. And, you know, it swings, you know, Vietnam was certainly a swing in the other direction, and you have kind of 9/11, and so I really think it's a time thing, but in a lot of senses, the pledge, at least for most Americans, I think, is a common rallying point that say, yes, we're all in this together, and the words of the pledge are not offensive to most people, and so I think this is probably here to stay. In other words, I think schools in South Dakota will head more toward that rather than staying the same or away from it.
Kevin, was there any final thoughts? Yeah,
I've heard "One Nation Under God." My understanding is sometimes there's a switch in those words depending on where it's being said, and of course that is the one potential flashpoint in there from some people. Apart from the military thing, was "One Nation Under God." Somebody that may not feel comfortable saying that or having their kids say it, it would be interesting to see if that issue was raised. And particularly in a town, you know, Rapid City, where there's been some controversy over a prayer prior to the city council meeting. So going back to what I said originally, you just never know where the flashpoint's going to be, and you never know where it's going to go from there.